the soul, the seasons of your spiritual life that you go through, and how God interacts with you in those seasons. So we've talked about summer, we've talked about fall, and today we're going to talk about winter. And in this message today, what I've done in this series is I thought the seasons are so different. What I wanted you to do is get an opportunity to hear those seasons through different voices. So last week, Pastor Clark shared about fall, and today Pastor Larry is going to come and talk about winter. Now, if you don't know who Pastor Larry is, I just want to introduce him really quickly. Pastor Larry oversees Celebrate Recovery, Grief Share, small groups, home groups. He also manages our facilities. He works with care. I'm sure I've missed some other things. What else? Nifty 50s. What else? It beats me? He said it beats me. So Pastor Larry covers a lot of ground, and he's one of those kind of people who ministers oftentimes behind the scenes so you don't see him. But I want to ask a question this morning as Pastor Larry comes. How many of you have ever been visited by Pastor Larry in the hospital or in some other way? Would you just kind of lift your hand for a minute? Just hold your hand up for a second. And look around, look in the balcony, look around. You can see people who have been touched by Pastor Larry's life. Would you give him a big welcome as he comes this morning?
Thank you, Larry. Thank you. Thank you. Oh, you're too kind. Thank you. Good morning. Listen, first of all, I got to say, the power of God hit me over a while ago when we was worshiping. And I'm not trying to get spiritual with you in just intercession. But as the song goes, I want to tell you before we start, for some of you this morning, if not many, your waiting is over. It's over. If you'll make the right choice this morning, your waiting is over. And God's going to help you this morning. Well, as Pastor Jay's already mentioned, we are continuing this season. He mentioned a few weeks ago when he was talking about summer, some of the pitfalls that maybe we need to watch out for as we enter into that season of our life. And Pastor Clark last week was dealing with fall and how we are to receive our harvest. This week we're going to talk about winter. And we want to remind you again, as has been said, that the glory of that all the seasons, God uses all the seasons for His glory and for our good. And as I started thinking about this message and sitting down and just contemplating, and words began to come to me, sort of like Pastor Clark did last week, about winter. Some of those things that we saw on the screen about if it ever snows here, snow, or, you know, the holidays and Christmas. And around our house, one of the famous things is Christmas cookies. Nana, Kathy, my wife, that's her favorite thing every Christmas. If she doesn't have Christmas cookies, then it's not Christmas. So she loves those Christmas cookies. And sitting around with the family, and around our house, as it usually is here in the South, you know, it's warm at Christmas time. So we kicked the thermostat down to about 62 and let it get real cold and build a fire anyway. And we just have a great time enjoying Christmas around the fire, even when it's warm at Christmas time. So it's a lot of fun. But there were other words that came to my attention also. Words that are not so joyful, such as cold and darkness and gloomy days and depression and those kinds of things. Death and loneliness. A lot of those things happen during the winter months. Now, I know some of you love winter, and that's okay. But I want to ask you a question. Do any of you know anyone that spent their life and their career in Florida and retired and went to North Dakota? I don't know of anybody myself. I don't know of anybody that done that. Now, I've had people tell me that God made winter and it must be good. But I want to be real clear here. There is no mention of winter in the Bible before fall. And in Genesis, we read that the Garden of Eden features trees that are bursting forth with life and fruit, and there are people running around without clothes. So needless to say, I don't know where the garden was, but it wasn't in North Dakota. It wasn't in North Dakota. But according to the Bible, winter is evil. Matthew, do we have that, guys? Matthew 24:20. Pray that your flight. Now, I understand the context of this verse, but would you allow me a little space here? Pray that your flight from what? Your flight from whatever is going on in your life during this winter season that you may be going through. Pray that your flight does not take place in winter. Now, we know this to be true. We know it in our bones. The ultimate of human suffering is hell and winter joined together. Personally, those good times of the seasons are all right, but I don't like winter. I just don't like winter. But regardless of what you think about the cold season, I want to spend a little time this morning to talk to you about another kind of winter. About the winter of the soul. About a spiritual winter. And just because you might or I might be able to find that place we can go that it's not cold, and I can recommend a wonderful place to you. It's beautiful. We went there last November on a missions trip. Cameroon, Africa. It's not cold there. You sweat when you eat. You sweat when you play. You sweat when you sit. You sweat when you're taking a bath. It's not cold in Cameroon, Africa. So you would love it there. Isn't that right up there, Jonas? It's hot in Africa. It is. So even though we can find that place we can go, that it's not cold in the wintertime, there's not anywhere we can escape the spiritual winters in our life. Now, guys, would you put that picture up of the moth? I want you to look at this. Look at that. Isn't that beautiful? That is an emperor moth. It's one of the most majestic species of the moth family. Isn't it pretty? And when it flies, its wings spread out real wide, and it's so majestic even when it flies, and it's beautiful. But before it becomes a moth, it's a pupa in a little cocoon. And the interesting fact about that is that the top of that cocoon is a very small, tiny hole that pupa that becomes a moth has to work its way out of. There was a young man one day who was on a hiking trip, and he come across this little cocoon of the pupa of a moth. And he decided he would take it home and watch this pupa come out of that cocoon. So he did, and he was sitting there at his table and began to watch as it began to struggle and move and work and squirm and try to work its way up through that tiny hole. And it began to move up a little bit. And he sat there for a long period of time watching this little pupa move out. And then all of a sudden he realized that there hadn't been any movement for a while. There was no struggle. It was just there. It seemed as though it was stuck. So because he was kind, he took a pair of scissors and he clipped the remaining of that cocoon. He did. And that little old moth just that pupa fell right out. But its body was swollen and its wings were all shriveled up. And he was sitting there and thought, well, in a few moments, it'll begin to gain strength and it'll pull its wings out and it'll throw it out there and it'll be free. It'll be free. But it didn't. That little moth lived the rest of its life with a swollen body and its shriveled wings. It never did fly. In a few days, it died. In the kindness and the haste of that man, he didn't understand that in the struggle and the restriction of that cocoon, in that the fluids of the body would begin to flow up and move out into the wings and give it strength and life and nourishment so that it could fly. Without the freedom and without the restriction, it could not fly. It could not go. It had to struggle in order to get to that place where it needed to be. You see, that man deprived that moth of the struggle. He deprived that emperor moth of life and health. You see, the struggles of life, heartaches, the pains, the hurts, are necessary if we want to grow. Now, the National Council on Health Statistics tell us that more people divorce, more people die, more people get depressed, and more people get sick in the winter season than any of the other seasons. They do. Spiritual winter is that in-between time when something has died in your life. It's gone and you know it may never return. But nothing new has arisen yet to take its place. And you're really not sure if it ever will. That's winter. When you're in winter, you feel not very productive. Not very strong. The psalmist said in Psalm 22, I am feeble and utterly crushed. I groan in anguish of heart. My strength fails me. Maybe you've lost a job. or you've experienced vocational failure. And you feel this sense of sadness. And not just that, but a kind of shame because without your job that you're identified with so strongly, you don't really know who you are anymore. You're in winter. Or a word comes back from the doctor's lab that the test was positive. And all the dreams that you took for granted, that you'd watch your children grow up and see them get married and you'd grow old with your spouse and that you would die when you got good and ready to. All of those things, all of your old dreams suddenly torture you with the thought that you won't be there to see it. You're in winter. The psalmist wrote in Psalm 39, "Man is but a puff of wind. He bustles about, but only in vain. He heaps up wealth, not knowing who will get it." You're in winter. Maybe you feel like you've failed as a parent. Things are not right with your child, or things are not right maybe between you and your child. And you're afraid of what might happen to that little life you had so much hope for. You wonder where you went wrong. You wonder if you will ever be able to put everything back together again. You're in winter. Or somebody you love with your whole heart has died. And you prayed so hard. You hoped so much. You don't understand, but you just know that your life will never be the same. Kathy and I had a little baby before our missionary, Kristen, was born years ago. And this baby only lived about 8.5 days and died. Kathy had a tremendous time in that pregnancy and carrying that baby. And I remember the time we went to the Brookwood Hospital and she came in and the baby was premature and really early. And it was born and it had many complications. So they had to transfer the baby down to UAB Hospital. And, of course, infection set in with Kathy, and she had to stay at UAB. And she was there 5 days and didn't even get to see that baby. We entered into a real deep winter in our lives. Things were going on and emotions in us that we hadn't dealt with before. And so the baby was there for a week. And Kathy only knew what I told her as I went back and forth to UAB and Brookwood and telling her about what was going on. And about the fifth day, the doctor said, "We've got to let her go." Her little body got hard as that pulpit. It was like she was petrified. So many complications going on in her life. And so we had to let her go. But we had prayed so hard. We'd claimed all the right scriptures. We thought we'd said the right things and we had hope that God would heal her, but she died. And you know, that took a strain on us. At that time in my life, I was working with evangelists and traveling and leading praise and worship in crusades and revivals. And I never will forget, there was those times that we would travel and be out on that anniversary date of that little baby's death. And I would pray as I went, hoping I wouldn't get a call, but there were several times I did. And it was Kathy. And boy, she was beside herself and distraught and just, oh, couldn't handle it. And I had to try to console her and help her and go and do what I could do to help her. But God was faithful. It took time. I wish there had been some of those groups back then, recovery groups and support groups that have been there at that time. It may have been, but we didn't have them around us. We had our church and that helped. But it would have been great to have that. But God began to work that out. But as the years passed, one day our oldest daughter, her husband, Brian, called and said, "Nana, I just want to tell you something. They had just had their third child. She was the youngest. I want to tell you something. We're going to give your little Joy back. We're naming this baby Joy." So God is good. He restores and He does that. Or maybe this morning you have become aware of a deep broken mess inside you. Maybe it came out in a real dramatic way, such as adultery or betrayal or deceit. Maybe it involved the pain of a broken marriage and your whole world has crumbled. You're in winter. Or maybe a pattern or a character trait inside yourself that you just hate and you've battled it for so long. How to deal with anger or fear or other people. And if you keep busy or noisy or successful, you can distract yourself. But when you get still, like right now, you become aware that the most painful gap in the world is the gap between the person that you're wanting to be and the person that you really are. And you wonder sometimes, as big as that gap is it ever going to get any smaller than it is right now? The psalmist expressed that thought like this in Psalm 37. My wounds fester because of my sinful folly. I am bowed down and brought very low. You're in winter. I believe the hardest part of winter is expressed with shocking candor and striking frequency in the Psalms, especially in Psalms 88, when the psalmist says, I cry to you for help, O Lord. In the morning, my prayer comes before you. Why, O Lord, do you reject me? Why do you hide your face from me, God? Have you felt that way? You pray and the words just bounce off the ceiling of the walls and you don't hear anything from God, and you read the word and it just don't get in there. You don't get anything, and you feel like you have no faith and you're not getting anywhere. You're just going nowhere. Why do you hide your face from me, God? That's the hardest part of winter. The hardest part is not just I'm in transition or I'm moving from one era to another and I'm not quite sure what it involves. Not just that life is hard or life is painful. The hardest part is I can't seem to find God. He don't seem to answer me. I don't seem to be hearing anything. The hardest part is, why, God, why do you hide your face from me? But James 4:8 says, draw near to God and He'll draw near to you. You keep on seeking. You keep on asking. You keep on knocking. Draw near to God and He'll draw near to you. Now, this morning, I want to look at three observations as we continue. But first, you may say, but Pastor Larry, is there any way to avoid winter? Is there a way to navigate my life so that I can go through it winter free? Are there five simple steps for winter avoidance? No. I realize that some people, though, believe that if we're just clever enough or strong enough or think positively enough, we can live in perpetual summer. If we just pray loud enough, trust enough, just do enough, get busy, life can be an endless summer, one moment of triumph after another. But Jesus Himself said this, and this is our first observation. Jesus said in John 16, in this world you will have tribulation. Jesus has said also, my God, why have you forsaken me? Why do you, God, hide your face from me? Jesus said that. And in Job 5:7, the text says, human beings are born to trouble as surely as the sparks fly upward. It's just predictable. You start a fire, you look at the sparks, they're going upward. It's inevitable. It's inevitable. Human beings enter this world, and they or we are all going to go through and no trouble. You know, sometimes we wish that God would remove our struggles and take away all of our obstacles. But just as the man crippled the emperor moth, so we would be crippled if God did that for us. God may not take away all our problems and difficulties, but He does promise to be with us through our struggles as we become better and stronger in Him. So, in winter, one of the things I learned, as we saw in the song a while ago, I'm not running the show. In summer, it can be very tempting for me to think that because my success, my wealth, my reputation, my intelligence, my virtue, even my faith, I'm in control. That's why things are going so well with me, and that my life will unfold how and when I want it to. But when winter comes, all the leaves are gone. They're gone. And you can see far in the winter. You can see far. In the winter, you begin to realize your health, your relationships, your family, your reputation, your stuff, more of them are under your ultimate control. The psalmist was right. We're but a puff of wind. I'm literally a puff of wind, a breathing machine. I am just a puff away from non-existence, and I think I'm in control of my whole universe. There's no way, no matter how clever or smart or as strong you are, you cannot engineer a life that's going to be winter-free. Our second observation, observation number two. In winter, you will be tempted. You will be tempted to isolate yourself. When it's winter, you'll be tempted to go into a kind of spiritual hibernation. Don't do it. Don't do that. Because winter very often carries with it a sense of failure or sadness or shame or loss of energy. In winter, you will probably never desire community less, and you will never need community more. You've got to remember that. Now, studies have been done all across the United States on groups to determine which groups significantly or experience significantly less depression than any other group. Remember, we read about that earlier, that more people get depressed in winter than any other season. There are many forms of depressions that arise simply because we hibernate into ourselves. We don't want to be around other people. That may be needed for a short period, but a very short period. We need community when we are waiting through our winter. So, one of these groups that stands out among all the rest, significantly less depressive, and what group would you think that might be? That would be less depressive? Left-handed people? Vegetarians? Blonde people? Men, women, boys, or girls? Well, I'm going to tell you. The group that's significantly less depressive than any other group is the Amish. Why? Why? Because they live with a real strong sense of community and are less vulnerable to depression. Now, I'm not suggesting this morning when we get through we all leave and go out and start communes. We don't need to do that. But the truth is, we are made for community. We need one another. And when you experience winter, and you will experience winter, you will never want community less. You will never need it more. So if you're not in community, take that first step. We have life groups. We have small groups. Get involved. Begin to make relationships and develop those friendships. The time to get into community is before winter strikes, so you will be ready when it comes. Because again, it will come. It's an amazing thing, and all of you know this. I'm an old country boy and was raised in the country when I was little most of my summers before I grew up and started playing ball and spent it with my grandparents and loved it. And I'd get out there and love to watch the animals and just... You get out there early in the morning before it gets daylight and everything is serene and quiet. And as the sun begins to come over the horizon, life begins. The squirrels start chirping and everything starts happening. But in the fall of the year, the animals begin to start getting ready. You remember the squirrels that fill their little cheeks with all those nuts and running to their nest and putting them in there, storing them. Bears begin to eat more so that when they hibernate, they've got that energy and food they need for the long winter. The birds begin to fly south, hopefully, where it's warmer. But the one species that does not prepare for winter, human beings, us, we don't prepare. It's predictable. Winter will come. It will, and you will need community. The time to prepare is now, even though it's still summer. Now, some of you have gone through a special grief. You've experienced a loss that's ripped a hole in your heart. Don't go through winter alone. I hope you'll call the office tomorrow if you're going through some of that. We have areas of care, little communities, if you will, for people who are going through grief recovery and divorce recovery and pains and habits and hurts. Don't do winter alone. Get involved with somebody. You may be here today and say, well, Pastor Larry, I don't feel like I'm going through a winter myself. But you know somebody who is going through that. What do you say? What do you say to someone who is grieving or sick or hurting or in pain? Listen to these words. This is from the book of Job. He was one in Scripture who knew very well what winter was in his own life. Job lost everything. He lost his wealth. He lost his standing in the community. He lost his family. He lost his servants. He even lost his health. And here was Job. He ends up sitting on an ash heap, scraping scabs off of his skin with broken pottery. And his wife looks at him, why don't you curse God and die? But Job had friends. He had community. Listen to Job 2 as I read this. If it's up on the screen, guys, there it is. Then Job's friend heard about all the trouble that had come upon him. Eliphaz the Temanite, Bildad the Shuhite, and Zophar the Naamathite. And they set out from their homes and met together to go and sympathize with him and give him comfort. when they saw him from a distance, they could hardly recognize him. They began to weep aloud. And they tore their robes and sprinkled dust on their head. Then they sat on the ground with him for 7 days and seven nights, which was the custom of that day. No one said a word to him because they saw how great his suffering was. 7 days and seven nights, no one said a word because they saw how great his suffering was. Now, the irony that struck me so strongly as I read this again was how often we say words because we see suffering. I'm guilty of this. I say words because I want to see you fixed. I say words because, to tell you the truth, I don't want to feel so bad, and I want to try to make you not feel so bad so I won't feel bad. And sometimes I'll just say words but I really am not sure, so I just say something. We all do that. There are times when people come to me who are deep in pain, and they say, "Pastor Larry, why? Why this?" I have no clever words to ease their pain. There are no words. It's a funny thing, though, but I think one of the most often violated commands in Scripture was written by the Apostle Paul to the Christians at Rome when he said, "Mourn with those who mourn." It's very interesting he does not say, "Give advice to those who mourn so they can straighten their lives out." He didn't say, "Find an explanation to give mourning people about why they're suffering so they'll understand it." He doesn't say, "Remind those mourning people that everything's going to be okay and they don't have to mourn anymore." No. But the primary comfort, not the only, but the primary comfort God brings one human being to somebody in winter comes not in the form of advice or the form of explanation. It comes primarily and simply in being with someone. Sitting there with them, maybe putting your arm around them and mourning for a while. Mourning with them. This is why winter requires compassion. This is why winter often grows compassion in people. I'm in summer, it's pretty easy for me to judge people. And I can get quite superficial and simplistic about how other people ought to live if I'm not careful. We all can get that way. When you go through winter, you get humbled real fast. You realize that you don't have all the answers that you thought you had. James 1:19 tells us, "Know this, my beloved brother. Let every person be quick to hear and slow to speak." This is why we need community. We all need one another. Our first observation was, in this world, we will have tribulation. Our second observation was, in winter, you will be tempted to isolate yourself. Now, our third observation. When you go through winter, you must cling tenaciously to hope. You don't stop hoping. I say this because people in winter are often prone to wonder, when will it ever end? Is this thing going to ever be over? It's got to stop. I'm at my end. I can go no further. There's a good friend of mine here in our church, Danny Culver. He owns a business down in Jemison. Ornamental iron business. Builds gates and fence. Beautiful things. If you ever need a gate or fence, call it. I mean, these things are nice and beautiful. Two or three years ago, when the market crumbled and the housing market went down, Danny's business went down. He and his brother had this business together, and they finally had to break up because they just couldn't support them. And Danny kept the business, and he tried to keep it going. But I remember a few years ago when we were meeting, Danny said, "Larry, you need to pray with me and agree with me. I don't know what I'm going to do." And this is the end of the year. We never have business at the end of the year during the holidays. I said, "Well, God is no respecter of the seasons. He can provide any time. It's not about this time of the season." I said, "So I'm going to begin to believe with you. I'm going to begin to agree with you. I'm going to begin to expect that God's going to provide the business for you." If you talk to Danny today, ask him. He's got more business right now than he can do. God blessed him because there was hope. There was hope that God was going to move, and there was expectancy that God was going to move. Speaking of expected, listen to this verse. Micah 7:7 says, and y'all, this is one of those refrigerator verses. This ought to be on your refrigerator. "But as for me, I will look to the Lord and confident in Him, I will keep watch. I will wait with hope and expectancy for the God of my salvation. My God will hear me." And of course, Isaiah 40:31 that you all know. "But those who hope in the Lord will renew their strength. They will mount on the wings of eagles. They will run and not grow weary. They will walk and not faint. There's hope. But when will it ever be over, you ask? Some of you have been in a winter or in your winter a long, long time. My wife's been in a winter a long, long time. She told me last night, she said, Larry, I'm coming tomorrow and I'm not going to be an altar worker. I'm going to come up. I want my winter to end. Some of you are here today wanting your winter to end. And it can if you make that right choice. You see, when you're in winter, it feels hopeless. It feels dark. You feel useless. Everything seems dead, but everything is not dead. Not really. Things begin to take root in winter. Things are being prepared. When the time is right, there will be new life that comes forth. That big old oak tree in your yard, if you have one, or a tree. The leaves are gone. It looks like it's dead. And you think, what am I to do? But down deep in the earth, those roots are going down and grabbing hold and taking in nutrients and water and beginning to hold on to that because new life is coming. New life is coming. But as we sung and worshiped earlier, you have to be patient. You have to be patient. I remember our little missionary Kristen when she was about 4 or 5, when I would get in my moments of just griping and complaining and falling into some of my little winter moments, she would come up and grab my leg and she'd look up and she'd say, Daddy, be patient, be patient. Don't be in such a hurry. And I'd look down at her and I'd want to say, oh, hush. But I couldn't because I knew the Holy Spirit was speaking through her to me that I needed to be patient and wait on Him. You have to trust that under the surface, life goes on. You must hope. The psalmist who knew about winter put it like this in Psalms 30. Sorrow may last for the night, but joy comes in the morning. Joy comes in the morning. In the winter of our lives, I believe with all my heart, we need to hope for 2 things. First of all, we need to hope that God will bring something good out of our winter. This is part of what the Bible talks about when it says that God redeems even suffering. Hope that God will bring good things out of your winter. It's a strange thing sometimes, but as I look back on my life, I find that the times of greatest growth were those times of winter. I found that in seasons of winter that life got real clear. Or in seasons of winter, compassion grew in me. Or in seasons of winter, I developed patience or my faith got real deep. I found that having gone through that winter period, I was able to give gifts of comfort and encouragement and love to other people who was going through the same winter. Now, if you give up when it's winter, you'll miss the promise of your spring, the beauty of your summer, and the fulfillment of your fall. Did you get that? I want to say it again. If you give up when it's winter, you'll miss the promise of your spring, the beauty of your summer, and the fulfillment of your fall. Now, the second thing of hope, the second thing we need to hope for in winter is that moment when morning will come. Truth is, I don't know when your morning's going to come, but I've prayed all this week that it would be today, or it would at least start today, the winter that you may be going through, and that you won't miss it. Truth is, I don't know how long it'll be, but one day it will be over and joy will come in the morning. I want you to remember today, something better is coming. I want you to remember to hope. I want you to, no matter how long or dark the winter has been, you keep fighting and hoping every day of life that God gives you on this earth. Fight, hope. I want you to remember that winter may be hard. It may be unavoidable. It may be deeply painful, but it is not final. It is not final. This season, this winter that you may be going through, is not allowed to have the last word. It's not. Would the praise team come now? Would y'all come? It's not allowed to have the last word. When our children were small, they all prayed to receive Jesus as their Savior. And they understood it, as little children understand. And as they were in the womb, we dedicated each one of them to the Lord. And we claim that verse. That verse we claimed is ours. Jeremiah 29:11. For I know the plans that I have for you, declares the Lord. Plans to prosper you and not harm you, but to give you hope, a hope and a future. I never will forget that day that I was walking down Brookwood Hospital, down that hall to the psychiatric ward. Our oldest daughter, Tammy, had taken pills and tried to commit suicide. And I was going to see her. I walked down that hall and they buzzed me in. And as I walked in, there was Tammy at the counter talking to the nurse. And I walked over and said, "Hey, Tammy, how you doing?" She said, "Just a moment, Daddy." And as I leaned against the counter, I looked down and noticed her arms had been slit from one side to the other. They weren't bleeding, but they had been slit at some time. Oh, and all of a sudden, winter came. Down in the depths of my being began to raise up emotions that I had never dealt with. Emotions that I had never felt. And I began to deal with those. And I said, "Oh, Jesus, Tammy, what have you done?" And we went back into her room and we began to talk. And through the tears, she was crying and I was crying. And I was desiring so much, wishing I could take that pain from her as her father. But I couldn't. But then down in me, down deep in me, hope began to rise up. Through the tears, Jeremiah 29:11 came out. "Tammy, God's not going to let you die. He's got a plan for your life. He's not going to let you die." It wasn't long after that that she tried again. And hurting and in anguish, I went again and said, "Tammy, you haven't got it yet. You don't understand. God's not going to let you die. He has a plan for your life." And she tried it several other times. But little Kristen was here in Master's Commission at that time. She gathered the Master's kids and said, "Hey, gang, would you agree with me for my sister that God will deliver her and save her, set her free?" And they came together and began to pray. And it wasn't too long after that that Tammy had a supernatural experience in her bedroom. She told us later, because the Brownsville revival was going on at that time, that, "God, if you just let me go down there, I can get saved and get free." He said, "I'll save you and free you right in your own room." And he did. And he set her free. And God began to work in her life. Now, she and her three children and her husband serve as pastors in Demopolis, Alabama, trying to help others come out of their winter. Out of their winter. Now, you may be here today, and I want our altar, our prayer team to come, if they would, our prayer team. You may be here today. You may not be at the point of committing suicide, but you may be at that point where Tammy was, and down inside, you feel like there's no hope for you. You have no hope today. You say, "Well, Pastor Larry, my winter's not so bad." It doesn't matter. We're all in the winter of our lives somewhere. We're all going through something. But you may be at that point where there's no hope. But I'm here to tell you this morning that God has a plan for your life. He has a plan for your life, and there is hope. It's your decision. You have to make the choice this morning. You can come and let God set you free, or you can walk out the doors. Now is the day. Now is the day. I don't have the next moment. You may walk out and you may never have another opportunity. Now, I'm not trying to put anything on you. There's no condemnation. But God is moving right now. The Holy Spirit is moving. He told me, Pastor Jay came this morning. He said, "I know God's going to do things this morning." I've been knowing that all week because I said in the beginning, some of you, your waiting is over. It's time. Now, for some of you, you may not understand totally what we were talking about, but you know down inside of you, "Man, I got something down here. I'm hopeless. I need something." You may have never trusted Jesus as your Savior. This morning, you can do that very thing. I want all of us to stand right now quickly, if you would. Would you stand? I'm going to give this simple prayer. I want everyone to pray with me in this auditorium. Everyone praying out loud right now. "Dear Jesus, I thank you that you can take me out of my winter. Because you said you would. I feel hopeless. I feel like there's nowhere to turn. But I'm asking you now to take this winter away from me. I'm asking you to come into my life. forgive all my sins, and to make me what you want me to be. Jesus, thank you. Because you said if I ask and believe in my heart, you would come in. So Jesus, thank you. Thank you. Now with every head bowed, every eye closed, I want no one.